Film Spotting is brought to you by Spout.com. Spout presents Butterknife, a new generation detective series made by a new generation of filmmakers. Find out more at butterknife.spout.com.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
We're not interested in art?
No.
Now look, we're going to do this thing. We're going to have a conversation.
From Chicago, this is Film Spotting. I'm Matty Robinson.
And I'm Adam Kempinar. This week on the show, it's Film Spotting's 200th episode celebration. We'll count down our top five Film Spotting discoveries with the help of original co-host Sam Van Halgren.
Plus your Film Spotting discoveries, a special dual Funny Voices edition of Massacre Theater, and new music from Wilder Embry.
We also have to discuss last weekend's Oscars and hand out our Bergman Marathon Awards. It's going to be a jam-packed show, but first, when a teenager floods his school with drugs, it's up to Robert Downey Jr. to stop him?
Mrs. Bartlett, quite frankly, he is one of our brightest boys here at school.
Well, I'm just not sure why he must be expelled.
He's been running a laminating press from inside his dorm room.
You have to admit, they look pretty authentic.
So what now, Mother?
Now we try public school. They didn't give you a locker in the teacher's lounge?
I'm not a teacher.
Sir looked like a teacher.
So, you're the infamous Charlie Bartlett. Is there a private school you haven't been kicked out of?
What's that? Is that a briefcase?
Actually, I believe it's an attaché case.
Mr. Kempinar, you and I come from similar backgrounds, both small-town Midwestern boys, but there is a big difference between you and me, of course, not counting the large age gap.
of a whole year and a half or
what?
Something?
No, why are you kidding me? I'm a gorgeous, healthy 24-year-old man child.
Uh-huh.
You're a 30-something puddle of regret and bitterness.
Keep dreaming.
But I digress. You grew up with an affinity for the John Hughes high school movies. I remember my babysitters used to watch, you know, watching these things, Pretty in Pink, etc. In fact, I never really knew these films existed until I got to college a couple years ago and people would constantly be referencing them. A
couple years ago.
Now comes along Charlie Bartlett, and many are calling it a throwback to those beloved 80s teen movies. My question to you, Kempy, are they right? And is that a good thing?
Well, I suppose you can lump this movie in with any teen comedy, though I tend to think of those movies, and actually wrongly, I guess, as sex comedies, though Pretty in Pink isn't a sex comedy, and certainly The Breakfast Club is a very serious film, but a lot more jokey than Charlie Bartlett is, certainly. But I guess I'm thinking more of the movies like Weird Science, which I love, which I guess you would put into that category. But it's funny, I didn't think about John Hughes at all when I watched this film, or subsequently as I've been thinking about it. Really, I think the obvious reference point for this film has to be Rushmore. And from some of the comments I've seen from some other critics, whether they state it directly or they're just implying it, everybody seems to be really upset this isn't a Wes Anderson movie, while at the same time, everyone always rips on movies for being too much like a Wes Anderson film. And this film is obviously very much influenced by Rushmore. You've got the preppy kid who doesn't fit in and he does his own thing. But that's exactly why I like this movie, because it isn't just another Wes Anderson knockoff. We've talked about that a lot here on the show. We don't need any more Wes Anderson ripoffs. And do I wish this film looked a little better like a Wes Anderson film? Sure. I'm not sure that it's all that skillfully shot, but the fact is, I don't need another movie with a cool soundtrack or a bunch of snarky, quirky people running around. And I love this movie's innocence and its sweetness. I think there's a little bit of sentimentality to it even that I really like. The way the main character, Anton Yelchin, playing Charlie Bartlett, comes into this public school system and is just completely willing to disregard that entire system that's in place and embrace anyone who's willing to embrace him. I really like the spirit of this movie.
Yeah, I couldn't stand it.
Really?
I couldn't stand it. I couldn't disagree with you more.
Wow, that's crazy.
This doesn't belong in the same sentence as Rushmore or Orange County, a film that I like better.
Oh, man.
That you don't even like.
But no, it's not
I think
good.
It deals with these themes. I don't like Charlie Bartlett. I don't like him. I don't want to be friends with him. He creeps me out.
No
He's
way.
Kind of got that Ken Lay meets Ted Bundy meets Urkel vibe. But you know what? That's fine. I'll watch a film about a movie about a character that I don't like. You don't need me to like you. Life is not a popularity contest. High school is not a popularity contest. This movie
it isn't?
Tries to convince you that it isn't. No, it isn't. And this movie, unfortunately, wants me to like it so badly that it just throws out everything out there so that I will embrace it, and I never did. So if you start with Charlie, okay?
Yeah.
My main issue is with this performance.
He's I love sort of, the performance.
No,
I think
you're
Yelchin's
kidding me.
Fantastic.
You're kidding
this
me.
This is a breakout
you're kidding
role.
Me. No way.
This is on par,
how
on
this?
Par with Ellen Page in Juno. Not up to that level,
you
but
have
a similar,
got to be
a similar
Adam,
breakout
come
role.
On.
A similar breakout role, absolutely.
Are you kidding
me? No, I'm not.
What? I think he's perfect. Specifically about it?
I think he's fantastic. I think he's a lot of fun. I think he's hilarious. I love everything about this performance. He shows a ton of range
here. Comes across as the smug, whiny, rich kid. He doesn't change from moment one to moment 100. And that's my big thing. No, it is. It is wrong. Look at the premise. It's actually a great premise for a film. You know, here's this rich kid. He wants to be accepted. So what's he do? He starts pushing drugs and starts acting as a counselor. Well, that's great. I love that. I could get behind a movie like that. It's subversive. It speaks to our society, over-medicating, not listening to our kids.
Yeah.
But if you're going to run with a setup like that, you really have to run with it. And so you have to deal with some real consequences. If you're going to be giving out prescription drugs and a kid ODs on them,
yes,
then you need to deal with it. And you need to present it in a real fashion. This thing goes off into high school special land where everything gets wrapped up in a neat little concert at the end. Come on, man. Give me some real consequence.
No, I agree with you there. I actually do agree that one of the flaws of the film is the way it tries to wrap everything up into a neat little ball at the end. It's not a perfect film by any means, though I disagree with this notion that there aren't consequences. I do think the movie does examine those consequences in some way, but the fact is, no, I love Yelchin in this movie. I think that with his character, the whole thing about Charlie Bartlett is that he's good at listening. That's what makes him good as a counselor. I think you see that in Yelchin the actor, and I love his theatricality, the clownishness of his character, the accents, the singing. I knew you would either love him or you would be totally turned off by it because he's doing a lot of very actorish things, but
why,
I'm sorry.
Why is he listening? He's listening so he can manipulate the system and make friends. That's the message you want to send out there?
Well, I think there's a lot of other messages to this film. This film is all about people, and this is high school, Maddie, being cast into roles they don't necessarily want to embrace, and yet they fall into those roles because it's a lot easier to do that than making the effort to be who you really want. That is high school. The rich kid has to be a pampered snob, so everyone tries to put him in that category, even though that's not who he is. The kid from the other side of the tracks is the bully. The principal, here, Robert Downey Jr., even clearly hates being the principal, but again, it's easier to just accept the responsibility, make people happy, do the job, than do what he really wants to do. That's what the film's all about, is finally being willing to cast away what the world wants you to be. I love that message.
No, there is a movie in there. You touched on it a little bit, and that's Robert Downey Jr.'s performance as this alcoholic principal. He is amazing. If we were going to go back and fix this film, you'd start out with a parallel story between Charlie Bartlett, this guy who really wants to be liked, and this principal who's not doing what he wants to do. He thinks he's supposed to be a principal. He really wants to be a history teacher, and he's trying to accrue all this respect from these students, and he's not getting it. He's failing at it. Well, all right, give me that story. Really set it up.
I thought we got that story.
No, we didn't at all. You just layer it with this high school schmaltz kind of cute scene after cute scene. None of it with any real consequence at all.
Well, I didn't think it was cute scene after cute scene. And even though you can't watch this movie without thinking about Rushmore or a little bit about Pump Up the Volume, the real film, the real key influence here has to be Harold and Maude, of course, from the first scene of this movie, where you see Charlie at home, he's at the dinner table with his mom, the way he's an outcast, I was instantly thinking of Harold and Maude. The key difference, of course, is that unlike Harold, Charlie actually wants to embrace the world from the start, which I think is fun to see happen. And then almost right on cue in this film, you get the moment where Charlie and his girlfriend, Susan, who is the daughter of the principal, they sing, if you want to sing out. You know they're paying direct homage to Harold and Maude. I thought that was great.
Of course,
John Pohl, clearly doing
another
that.
Another instance of the derivative nature of this film.
Sure, but what I think is happening is it's not derivative. It's a nice update on Harold and Maude. That was 37 years ago. I think this is a perfect companion piece to it. It's a little update on Hal Ashby's work, something taking into consideration what high school is actually today.
Catherine O'Hara in Orange County does the mother role so much better than what Hope Davis tries to pull off here.
Maybe so.
So
I can't really argue with that because I saw Orange County like 7 years ago, and not memorable.
I just think if people are looking for something that covers this material, I would send them to that or to Rushmore before I would send them to this. And I think I will give this movie credit for being an R-rated film, and it doesn't go for the raunch or the gross-out comedy, like American Pie or something like that. It is adult in its themes. I do respect that. But at the same time, I really felt that it could have been something so much more, and it didn't rise up.
Okay, well, it did work for me. I can't believe the scene where he tries out for the school play. You didn't think that was funny, Maddie?
That was funny.
It was hilarious.
It was funny.
Biggest laugh I've had at the theater in these past 2 months had to be that moment right there.
It was cute. It was cute. The best thing this guy got out of me the entire time was sort of a grin here or there.
Okay, well, I got a lot more out of it. I think Anton Yelchin is really fantastic in this role. You can see for yourself, Charlie Bartlett is in theaters now. Agree or disagree with our take? Send an email or a short MP3 clip to feedback@filmspotting.net or leave us a voicemail by calling 206-203- 2463. Maddie, I was sure we were going to agree on this film, but I'm glad we didn't.
Yeah, I'm a little taken aback. All right, time for a quick break. Film spotting turns into Entertainment Tonight as Adam forces me to talk about the Oscars again. An awards show so prestigious it bestowed a grand total of zero Oscars to the man whose marathon will wrap up next, Mr. Ingmar Bergman. Stay with us.
If I could make you a promise, I could believe him. I'd write it on the building, tattoo it on my skin. If there was just his doubtless calm that I could keep with him, maybe push past the pulling back that we've been sinking in. Yeah, we're pumped, but baby, there's no bond.
Hi, this is Danny Boyle, director of Sunshine and Trainspotting, and you're listening to Film Spotting.
Hi, Adam and Maddie. This is Ben Jackson in Boise, Idaho. And I just want to say I've been listening to the show since about May of 2007. I think one of the first episodes I listened to was the review of Rescue Dawn. And I have to say, my best film spotting discovery was Werner Herzog. I would never have seen any of his films if it weren't for the show, and I've seen several of them now and have been just completely and utterly transfixed by all of them. So thank you so much for introducing me to Herzog. I've listened to the Herzog marathon you did, and I absolutely love it, and thank you guys for doing such a great job.
You're listening to Film Spotting with Adam and Maddie. A great voicemail there from Ben in Boise chiming in with one of his big film spotting discoveries, Werner Herzog. And there's a nice tie-in to film spotting there, actually. Back when Sam Van Hollegren interviewed Werner Herzog and they did a little test, we played this as an outtake, he asked Werner Herzog to say where he was from, and he said that he was from Boise, Idaho, which was very funny at the time. I think he also said he was a shepherd. So good stuff there, Ben. We will certainly hear more about Werner Herzog later in this show. But we do want to get to our poll questions right now, starting with our poll results from last week with the Oscars. We wanted to know who you thought the Best Actress Oscar should go to. Maddie, how did it come out?
Well, Ellen Page took top honors at 42%, Julie Christie second, Marion Cotillard 23%, Kate Blanchett 5%, tying with Laura Linney of the Savages 5%.
Well, Marion Cotillard winning the Best Actress Oscar, obviously, but only finishing third here probably has something to do with the fact that very few people actually saw La Vie en Rose. A lot more people seeing Juno, I'm sure.
Right, and I think probably what happened in the Oscars as well, Paige and Christie split the vote.
Yeah, that very well could be. Certainly, you thought Marion Cotillard was deserving. She is really good as Edith Piaf. And there is something, as I mentioned on a recent show, something extremely fitting about her and Daniel Day-Lewis both winning the Best Actor and Actress Oscars, because both of those performances are larger than life. So before we get to a little bit more Oscar talk, we want to share the poll question for this week, and you're going to hear our answers to it here in a moment, but we want to know what you think Ingmar Bergman's best film is.
Is it Fanny and Alexander, The Seventh Seal, Shame, Smiles of a Summer Night, Wild Strawberries, Winter Light, Other, or Wish I Had an Opinion?
I'm guessing there are a few people out there that maybe haven't been following along with the marathon, but do want to explore Ingmar Bergman's catalog, and maybe that's going to be their choice. I certainly hope they do.
Yeah, and if we've learned anything, we'll touch on this in a little bit, is how accessible I've really found these Bergman films.
No.
They're not. Don't be intimidated.
You're absolutely right. That's a great point. Let's get into a little bit of Oscar talk. And as you said in the tease, Maddie, I'm dragging you kicking and screaming into this segment. And you noted about Ingmar Bergman. Of course, he did not ever win an Oscar, though he was nominated 9 times. But in fairness to the Academy, Fanny and Alexander did win Best Foreign Language Film. So they haven't completely snubbed him. He even won the Thalberg Award back in 1971.
1971, after which he would go on to make
Fanny
about
yet.
15 movies.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why that is exactly, but he certainly had done a lot worthy up to that point. But it's funny, Maddie, we've been talking about the Oscars a little bit. They were last weekend, of course, and you have no interest in talking about the Oscars, and yet you freely admit that you love watching the Oscars.
Oh,
so
I love
please
the
explain.
I love the Oscars for what they are. It's a bunch of celebrities getting together playing, you know, employee of the month, basically. That's what it is, patting each other on the back. And I think it's fun to have a couple martinis and watch it and make fun of them and enjoy it for what it is sort of a splendid thing. But to sit here and actually discuss the winners and the losers, since I've joined Film Spotting, I actually ascribe even less relevance to that just because I've seen so many films. I know how many great films are out there. So to hear who Brad Pitt thinks, you know, was the best film from last year, I don't really care.
Okay.
But of course, I love the party.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I do think it's fair to say a good number of our listeners do probably expect us to address the Oscars,
yes,
albeit briefly, so we will just talk about them here a little bit. I think it's fair to say that we expected and were pleased with some of the results. Javier Bardem winning for Best Supporting Actor, Daniel Day-Lewis winning Best Actor, No Country for Old Men getting Best Adapted Screenplay, Direction, and Best Picture. Of course, we knew Diablo Cody was a slam dunk for Best Original Screenplay for Juno, and we were both fine with that. I'm not really surprised, but I was definitely happy to see Falling Slowly win for Best Song.
Oh, that was great.
It really was no choice.
That was my favorite moment of the entire night, too, because you could tell everybody in the theater was pulling for them, and Jon Stewart loved them,
yeah,
so much so that you could tell as they went to break, because, you know, unfortunately, the conductor cut off after Hansard talked.
Yeah.
He cut off Marquetta.
Or Glover.
And then they realized their error, and so he came down, and then he went right back up again,
yeah,
and Jon Stewart recognized it too and brought it out. You
yeah
could tell he loved her.
No, and she was really great, though it's funny. I did get into a little bit of a discussion with one of our listeners, Brett Merriman, by email, where I did admit that it struck me as a little bit odd, though, that throughout the night, a ton of people got cut off during their speeches.
Well, that's what
why
I'm saying.
Bring her back
I'm saying
in particular?
You could tell. He just had an
he
affinity
just liked
for
him.
Them.
Yeah. No, you're right, and I did too, so I was glad to yeah see him do it. I guess Marion Cotillard winning over Julie Christie, or maybe even Ellen Page, was a little bit of an upset, though certainly there was a lot of buzz that she might win it. I think the biggest surprise of the night had to be Tilda Swinton winning over Cate Blanchett and Amy Ryan, and maybe even Ruby Dee. And I'm cool with it because I love Tilda Swinton. I do think she's very good in mm-hmm that role in Michael Clayton, but you know, in terms of the broadcast, you said you were bored, Maddie, when we talked about it a few days ago.
I think the writer's strike affected it.
Yeah, the montages were, of course, overbearing and ridiculous. There was just too many of them. But for me, the thing is, it never really bothers me that the Oscars are too long because I'm never just sitting there watching the Oscars. Like, I'm always cleaning my house or doing other things,
oh,
and I just don't watch
I love
the boring
it
parts.
Oh, I'm hanging on everything.
Oh, no,
oh, I'm
I
hanging
can't
on everything,
it.
And people cannot talk unless they've been pre-qualified to make snarky comments. You know, do not interrupt
really
my watching the Oscars.
I could never just sit and watch the Oscars.
Oh, I
couldn't
do
it. I did love Jon Stewart. I thought his opening monologue was really funny and a big improvement from last year. No, of course, every moment didn't land, but who cares? I don't think anyone's going to land every moment. I really liked him. And the last thing I wanted to bring up, unless you have a few other Oscar moments you want to single out, Taxi to the Dark Side winning for Best Documentary. You've seen it. It was part of Maddie's Movie Minute.
Yeah.
I have yet to see it, but I know you were glad to see that.
Yeah, very well deserved. And Counterfeiters, another movie I've seen, one foreign language film. I'll withhold my opinion on that film because we might talk about it here later on. I also wanted to add, I actually thought that Jon Stewart wasn't tough enough on this Hollywood crowd.
Really?
I love it when Chevy Chase comes
but
out and says...
But he gets criticized for that, actually.
Who
for
cares?
Being
that's
a little too anti-Hollywood.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
You know, Chevy Chase comes out and says, hello, Hollywood phonies.
I know.
You know? But I would like to say, Helen Mirren, how gorgeous a woman is Helen Mirren. Taylor Hackford, one lucky, lucky
yes
man.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right there. With Jon Stewart, though, the bit where he had the line about Norbit, that was pretty biting and very
yeah
good.
That was
nice to see even
I
movies
that, was
that
the,
aren't
I,
good.
I thought that was the best line of the night.
But didn't you at all feel a little bit sorry for the people nominated for Norbit? Their big night, they're sitting there at the Kodak Theater, and then they just get taken down but by Jon Stewart.
They are professionals. They know the movie.
They know the
bad
movie sucked.
Their work is probably extraordinary, and I can't comment on it. I didn't have to see Norbit.
No, I didn't either. That's exactly right. And this is actually a perfect time to bring in something I just briefly want to mention. We got the Bergman Awards we want to get to here, but I happened to read an article, Maddie, with Forrest Whitaker, who is in the movie Vantage Point. We talked about maybe reviewing it this week on the show. He's in an interview in Time Out Chicago at the back of the magazine, and they're asking him about it, and he basically admits, you know, it's a thrill ride kind of movie. It's not about the political situation and all that stuff. And at one point he says, you're catching me, you know, you're catching me, man, because I'm an honest guy, so you're messing with me right now. And then at some point the interviewer asks him, do you think it's a shortcoming that it doesn't deal with the political stuff? It's all about the car chases. And he says, you know, I don't know if that was ever the intent, so that's maybe not fair, whatever. The interviewer then says, did you like the film? Did you enjoy it? Silence. The interviewer says, hello? Hello? And Forrest Whitaker says, yeah, I'm here. I think, this is going to be an interesting article. The concept of replaying the same moment from different perspectives is interesting, and some action sequences are really exciting, and the actors are very talented actors.
Wow.
That's all he says.
I love it.
Just silence. Like, he can't play the game. He can't say, yes, it's a good movie, even though he's in it. I give him a lot of credit for that. Well, let's get to some good movies, though, Maddie. It is our Ingmar Bergman Awards. We're calling them the Svens in honor of
Uncle Sven
Nyquist and your uncle. And we're just going to briefly go through these. We mentioned the movies we watched in the marathon just a minute ago in the poll question. Let's start with best actress. Who gets your Sven?
Gunn Wahlgren. She plays Helena Ekdahl in Fanny and Alexander.
Mother.
Yeah, and the grandmother, the matron of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And the same reason that I loved Julie Christie, and even more so Gordon Pinson in Away From Her, she just exudes this grace and confidence. And the scene between her and her dead son could have been something entirely different, and it just comes across so devastating because it's just played at this level of, it's really just beautifully done.
Yeah, it really is. She's fantastic. And of course, with your recent comment about Helen Mirren, it's just very clear you're into elderly actresses.
I do.
Okay.
All
well,
right. Well,
I'm not going
to
blame you.
I don't know what to say to that.
No, I don't blame you.
I love the ladies. I love. Give me some experience.
Well, my best actress, we saw Ingrid Thulin, who's fantastic in Winter Light and Wild Strawberries. Bibi Anderson was in three of these movies. We only saw Liv Ullmann in one movie, Shame. She's getting my Sven.
Yeah,
I love her in that film. Best actor then, Maddie.
My best actor is Victor Sjostrom from Wild Strawberries. There's not a whole lot to say about this performance. You actually had him on your top five performances over
by
60.
Senior citizens or whatever,
I might have pretended to have seen the film way back then. He would be my number one now if we went back and redid that list.
No, he's amazing. He gets my award as well. But then we've got two specialized acting awards here, Maddie. Best performance by Gunnar Bjornstrand, who is in all six movies we watched in this marathon.
He was the discovery for me. He really was. And I have to go with his turn as Pastor Thomas Eriksson in Winter Light. He's supposedly this man governed by faith, supposedly governed by the principles of religion. And ultimately, he questions it at every turn and reveals himself to be this very ugly human, and I just loved taking that gut-wrenching journey with him.
Yeah, he really is brilliant in every film we saw, and especially in Winter Light as the pastor. But I'm going with his performance as Jans the Squire in The Seventh Seal, just because he's kind of a badass, but he's also really funny at the same time, kind of a court jester, but has that been there, done that mentality of the world. I just think it's really good. We then have to do our best performance by Max von Sydow. Where are you going with that one?
I got to go Seventh Seal. It's his largest performance. The other roles require him to be a little bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And Max von Sydow is just this such a large man. He can play small, Pelle the Conqueror. He can play vulnerable.
Sure.
But, you know, in the Seventh Seal, he's just fantastic as the knight.
Certainly was my runner-up, but I'm going with Shame with Liv Ullmann here, a movie I did like more than you, but I like it because it's almost a dual role where he changes from this kind of effete artist to, by the end, this animalistic survivor and is big, as you would expect Max von Sydow to be, and
good
is
point.
Really good.
Good point. He does change.
Best, most haunting scene. Did you go with best, or did you go with a haunting scene, Maddie?
Well, I'm just going with, we think it's the grandmother wailing in Fanny and Alexander.
Yes. Your actress.
Yeah,
yes.
Gunn Wahlgren. Losing her son.
Mm-hmm.
That, for me, just
watching
the son, you know, watching little Alexander come down the stairs, does these screams keep getting louder and louder? I mean, they just reverberate.
Yeah, it really is a haunting scene. Absolutely a good choice for me. I don't know how you pick. You've got the bodies in the water in Shame, Dance of Death in Seven Seal, the bedroom scene that I love. It isn't haunting, but it's just a beautiful moment in Smiles of a Summer Night where the bed comes through the wall.
The monologue in Winter Light.
The monologue in Winter Light. Ingrid Thulin's direct address to the camera, definitely one I considered where she's reading the letter. But I guess I've got to go with what I think is the iconic Bergman moment, that first two-shot of Max von Sydow as the knight playing chess with death as the waves roll into the shore in the background. It really is, for me, the single image I most associate with Bergman, and I'm sure many people do as well. That does bring us to Best Picture. It's hard because we liked all these movies. What'd you go with?
Got to go with Wild Strawberries.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I liked elements of every single film, but for me, this was the most complete journey, and it's the one that actually made me get up in the middle of the night. I couldn't sleep. I had so many thoughts racing through my head, and it got me to write. I'm a playwright, and it got me just to sit down and write just so I could purge these thoughts, sort of sublimate everything running through my head through creativity.
Fantastic. Well, we actually are on the same page here. It was so hard because I love The Seventh Seal, and as we talked about with Fanny and Alexander, I think it's the culmination probably of his entire body of work. But the movie I would tell any Bergman neophyte to start with would be Wild Strawberries.
Yeah.
Love Victor Sjostrom, obviously, Ingrid Thulin in it. The way it incorporates memory and his nightmares, I think, is just fascinating and haunting and scary a little bit. And I just love the idea of exploring the choices this guy has made and all his regrets. It's just really an amazing film. So I'm with you as well. Wild Strawberries gets our Svens, and we are now finally wrapping up the Ingmar Bergman marathon. It's been a while.
Yeah, you know, one thing I wanted to ask if you had noticed it. Because he comes from a theatrical background, early on, he sort of deals with these big issues in a very theatrical way.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end, you get to Fanny and Alexander, and you almost feel like he has learned the specific power of film.
Maybe
he's almost learned like the specific power of the face, of just a look here and there. And he just uses it to just the utmost degree.
No, you're absolutely right. I think it probably is his most cinematic in a lot of ways. And yet, that is a great point as well, because when we first started this marathon, a point I would constantly make in my notes but then never find time to bring up on air is how theatrical all the films mm-hmm. are. If you look at the blocking of all the scenes, it's just like a stage play. People who are talking with each other are all kind of lined up in a little semicircle in front of the camera. It's not really natural, but it's like what it would be on a stage. He certainly does come from that background. But by the time he gets to Fanny, he maybe is at the full strength of his powers. Great fun with the Ingmar Bergman Marathon. We move on now to the Pedro Almodovar Marathon, and when we come back in 2 weeks, we will jump into those films. We'll start with The Flower of My Secret, and then we'll go to Live Flesh, All About My Mother, Talk to Her, and Bad Education. There are a lot of late 80s movies from Almodovar I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with and want us to watch, but they're not easily available on DVD. I'm thinking movies like Matador and Law of Desire. Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, a great film, one I really like and wish we could watch, but you can't get it through Netflix. Yeah. So,
and we really want people to be able to play along.
We want people to play along. We're going to watch those five movies in our Almodovar Marathon. We hope you will play along with the marathon.
Time for another quick break. You know him as the original co-host of this program. I know him simply as Dad. Sam Van Halgren and your top five film spotting discoveries when we come back. Stay with us.
Business chair on a shower curtain. Wedding rings on the window ledge. Tufts of hair billowing below us. Pieces of her strewn around the town. Makes her real living down at the steakhouse. Got her beauty license back before the worst got the best of her. Cuts and styles on the kitchen.
Hey, Maddie, Adam, and Sam. This is Kate from UIUC calling with my top film spotting discoveries. For me, there are two films that really stand out, and I would be very surprised if they didn't make your list. Those films are Brick and Rio Bravo. Thank you for 200 episodes of great podcasting, and keep up the good work. Bye.
Hey, guys. Kevin from Buffalo Grove, Illinois. The top number one movie which I wouldn't have seen without film spotting at the time for the cast would be Annie Hall. I hadn't seen it before. I hadn't really seen any Woody Allen. You brought it up. Sounded interesting. Watched it, I laughed, I cried. It's now my favorite movie of all time, and I recommend it to everybody I know. So, eternally, thank you.
Welcome back to Film Spotting with Adam and Maddie. In honor of our 200th episode here, we are sharing our top five film spotting discoveries. We heard some great picks there from Kevin and Kate, and we'll hear some more great listener emails and voicemails here in a bit. But first, what better way to celebrate this milestone than to welcome in a special guest, my original partner in crime, Mr. Van Perbele himself, Sam Van Hallgren. How are you doing, Sam?
Well, it's been a long time in that closet. You finally opened it back up. Musty in there.
I bet.
My mouth is dry. It's parched.
No, it's great to have you here, of course,
here.
With your pal Maddie as
yes.
well. Will you give us a quick update, though, on the family status? Carrie is here with us today as well, and I'm sure listeners are curious.
Yeah, and Carrie's tummy's here with little, as we're calling him, Roscoe Van Hallgren.
I thought it was a girl. It was Linny Van Hallgren, which I approved of.
We're sticking with Roscoe. Sex unknown.
Okay.
Roscoe P. Coltrane. That's right. We're thinking about decorating it, the whole thing. Actually, the room, the baby's room. In
a Dukes of Hazzard
theme? Dukes of Hazzard theme.
I love it. The General Lee.
General
Why
Lee
not?
Crib.
Okay,
all
well,
right, moving on.
We should move on, but I do, before we move on to, you know, the discoveries and all that fun stuff, I did want to briefly set you guys up to tell our listeners about your relationship. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit on the show with Maddie coming in, but of course, Sam, I met you through our friend and my college roommate, Kevin Rich, and then through Kevin and you, I met Maddie. You guys were living together at the time. So you guys want to just briefly set up this wonderful friendship here?
Yeah, well, we were working together, the McGovern campaign?
72, wasn't it? That's right. Boy, yeah. Time flies.
We lost Wisconsin. We were really tumbling coming out of there. We got Muskie on our tail. I meet this fledgling little speechwriter, precocious guy from New Hampshire, some one-room schoolhouse. He comes to me with this speech. Where was it? It was down at the Stockyards, I think.
It was home cooking, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what it was. That's what it was. Home cooking. We are cooking. We are cooking from home.
Yeah,
something like that. I don't remember.
And
but
this idealist, from Minnesota. It's a match made in heaven. Really.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, we went to film school together at 1910 West Ainslie, actually, in the early 2000s, which I hope we get a chance to get to maybe in the top five. I have a little anecdote.
Uh-oh.
It's not a good one, I do have one about the film school time, our Netflix-sponsored film school.
Yes, and of course you guys were in college together
at Kenyon College.
Yes. Okay, well, let's go ahead and then get on to the fun here. We want to start, though, Sam, with some unfinished business. Back on 150, our episode number 150, we confessed to the top five movies we were most embarrassed to admit we've never seen. Volume two, and I can't actually believe we're about to rehash these again. I'm just going to heap the shame on some more. But we did promise that we would watch these five films by episode 200. We'll see if I lived up to the promise or not. But your five movies you were most embarrassed about, The Long Goodbye, then you had an 80s pairing of 16 Candles and a to-be-decided 80s movie. You had Double Indemnity, which I vaguely recall you having seen. I'm not sure. The 400 Blows, and The Seven Samurai. Yeah. So of those other four, did you get all of them seen, and what did you think of them?
I did. I mean, my God, I was happy to knock off. I think the one I was happiest to knock off, I don't know between Seven Samurai and 400 Blows, I don't know how you could choose, but somehow it was more satisfying to say that I'd finally seen 400 Blows, which was incredible. Mm-hmm. I was really happy to see that. I think because I had lied to somebody about having seen it recently. I need to erase this guilt from my record. Seven Samurai was incredible. 400 Blows, Double Indemnity. I'm not sure. Is that episode still available on FilmSpotting online?
I deleted it.
.net. I went even further with the 80s trilogy. Saw Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, and Weird Science, this John Hughes triptych. I was impressed to some degree by all of them. Kelly LeBrock, one of the greatest comedic female performances of all time. Not quite.
According to Dylan Kidd
on our show. According to you.
No, Dylan Kidd.
I always
top five
that to
female
you.
Comedic performances. I think Dylan Kidd had
what
Kelly LeBrock.
What movie is this from?
Weird Science.
Weird Science.
Oh, I don't know that film.
No, you don't. You're clueless about the 80s just like Sam was. You need to have your own marathon.
But I came out of it really impressed with Molly Ringwald. I mean, for what she was.
Mm-hmm.
And John Cryer as Ducky in Pretty in Pink was great. So.
And you love The Long Goodbye, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. Altman's Long Goodbye, which I saw just before we started the Noir Marathon, which was a great way to start it, probably even a better way to end it.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Stuff.
Well, for me, my five, again, I can't believe I'm saying these out loud.
This is my favorite, to actually watch you squirm, because you have to understand, if he admits he hasn't seen a film, he will cut that out on air.
He will cut it out of script.
Yeah.
That
editorial control.
I haven't seen it.
That has never happened.
I haven't seen it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All the time. Happens all the
all
time.
The raw
well, Sam, how many times did we leave out feedback in which they talked about films we hadn't seen?
That's true. It would happen.
All the time.
It's like we can only humiliate ourselves so much and so often.
Exactly.
Right. I haven't seen a single one of the films you guys have mentioned so far.
Well, my five were Fanny and Alexander, Lawrence of Arabia, North by Northwest, I had a Renoir double pairing, Rules of the Game and Grand Illusion, and then my number one, Once Upon a Time in the West. And I have, of course, seen Fanny and Alexander now and loved it. And I've seen Once Upon a Time in the West, a huge listener recommendation, the Sergio Leone film, and I did really enjoy that as well. The middle three, gotta say, didn't get to them. I'm dropping the, you know, three kids at home card and film spotting every
You're
week.
You're waiting
I didn't
for the Renoir marathon, though.
I am.
I
Hopefully,
would use that
it's going to come up. So anyway, we did want to at least update you on that because we did promise episode 200 we would have that for
so
you.
My record's clean.
Your record is clean. I'm very proud
of
you.
Have you seen North by Northwest?
I haven't.
No.
Wow. No, and I have no excuse. So let's move on to listener discoveries. We asked our listeners to write in or voicemail in their film spotting discoveries, movies that they don't think they would have seen and consequently enjoyed if it wasn't for us talking about them, probably ad nauseum here on this show. We've got a lot of great emails here we want to jump into. Sam, do you want to kick it off with Wayne?
Yeah, sure. Wayne from the D.C. suburbs writes, as far as what has film spotting done for me, I am very grateful for many of the films I've seen and enjoyed that I never would have caught without your guidance. However, number one on that list has to be Rian Johnson's Brick.
Yeah.
Well done. This flew totally under the radar. Should have been as big as Juno. Brilliant, satirical, intense, funny. High school kids talking like 40s film noir characters, totally believable and absurd at the same time. I am looking forward to the Brothers Bloom with as much anticipation as I had for No Country.
Big words.
Thanks, guys. Wayne in the D.C. Burbs. That's great.
Yeah, and Mark Durham here, Maddie, he echoes Wayne's sentiment.
Yeah, there's been so many, but Brick was probably the biggest surprise. I never would have seen this movie. I was totally floored. Oh, and also The Lake House. My living room got suspiciously dusty at the end there. Take that, he says, Sammy.
Thank
we
you,
really could have
Mark.
Easily edited that for you, Mark and Durham. And now you're doing so well
it's on
there
the record.
With Brick.
It's on the record.
Lost
it's out there for the whole world
I love
world
how people just undermine their credibility establishing it.
That's what we do.
Pulling the rug of credibility under
yeah.
themselves.
Scott Beard in Norman, Oklahoma writes, I was listening to Film Spotting number 197, and I have a Film Spotting discovery I wanted to share. Matty Robinson, during the top five of 2007 episode, mentioned that his number one movie was After the Wedding. I absolutely loved this film, and I wept like a small child. Thanks, guys, for bringing this movie into my life, and I'm trying to tell everyone I know to experience it. Keep up the good work. Nicely done, Maddie, and it is a very good film.
That's what I want to say, too. Sarah in Madison, Wisconsin writes, last year my two fave films were Sunshine and a pairing of Rescue Dawn and Little Dieter Needs to Fly. I wouldn't have gone out to see either of these films, and because of your Herzog marathon, I understand a little more of this guy's background, which has opened up his work to me, which I really enjoy. The scenes where he was making Dieter relive the captivity in Little Dieter were amazing. There were several of us who were watching these together on our home projector, and there was tumult in the room. Let me just say, people come to me to ask which films are worth going to see because I listen to the show.
Wow.
We love to hear that.
That's good.
All right, well, Aaron, Appalling Sunrise in Albany, New York, writes in, here are a few of my Cinecast film spotting fueled discoveries. Number three, My Own Wussiness, a.k.a. the horror marathon one and done. After watching Dawn of the Dead, I decided that I couldn't sit through the rest of the horror marathon. Yes, I'm an enormous baby. I'm right there
we
with
can
you.
Relate.
So this
yeah.
is about learning something about yourself.
That's
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
That's it.
I am a baby, okay? That's
number
nice.
Two, Westerns, a genre that I had completely dismissed. But man, when you guys did the Westerns marathon, my eyes were open. Stagecoach was a great intro, and The Searchers was also a revelation. There were actually many discoveries for me throughout this marathon. John Ford, John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart playing something other than George Bailey type. The list goes on and on. But number one, discovering that film spotting is all I need to entertain my mom when she comes to visit. Every month or so, my mother comes to visit her grandkids, and me, I guess. We've got a tradition of watching movies and ordering Chinese food after the kids are in bed. I can't think of a movie we've watched that hasn't been chosen because of film spotting. Thanks in large part to your reviews, we've rarely had a stinker. We've watched countless under-the-radar type films that my mom has never heard of, including Bubble, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, The Squid and the Whale, Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada, The Science of Sleep, etc., etc. I could go on for a long time. It's great. I always come out looking like the hero for picking such great films. So yeah, thanks. Can't wait for the next 200 shows.
Love that email, and how cool
I know,
is Aaron's
with his mom.
Mom?
Talk about, yeah. Yeah, Melquiades Estrada, I mean, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Bubble.
And liking it?
And liking it, apparently allowing him to continue choosing films.
That's fantastic.
After introducing her to Bubble.
I know. Good
that
stuff.
That is good stuff. Indeed.
Liz Rocher in New Haven, Connecticut. There are a lot of movies that I wouldn't have seen had it not been for film spotting. My favorite, though, has to be The Black Dahlia. I listened to your review of it and laughed my blank off.
Fire and ice.
A few weeks later. I saw it at a second-run theater because I was curious. Though you both hated it, Sam was, as usual, a bit more passionate in his condemnation. And knowing him to be the king of hyperbole, I had to see for myself if this film was as bad as you'd said it was. And, oh, it was everything you said and more. I laughed through the whole thing, concocting drinking games in my head, and marveling at how something so absolutely ridiculous actually made it to the big screen. I didn't buy it when it came out. I couldn't justify spending more money on something that bad. A friend of mine bought it for me, and I still watch it when I need a good laugh.
So thank you
for reviewing the De Palma film The Black Dahlia and for introducing me to one of my favorite so bad it's good films of all time.
Oh, one day Film Spotting will be big enough to buy the rights to The Black Dahlia and release the Fire and Ice edition.
That would be awesome.
Because now this film is at risk of being unseen.
Fading away.
And fading away.
Know, when the American Film Institute honors Mr. De Palma, I hope you're there, Hallgren. I hope
to just
you're
heckle
there.
Through the whole thing?
Yeah.
I'll be invited as chief heckler.
We want to say thanks to Liz, too. She's been a long-time listener, very devoted, great
listener. I think
she's
newly of New Haven, actually.
She was from Chicago, right?
Yeah, Beloit, actually, Wisconsin.
That's right.
We met up with her in Chicago, but now she's moving out to Yale in New Haven.
Excellent.
So congratulations to Liz on that. Let's go to this one, another good one from Jeff in New York.
Yeah, Jeff in New York writes, I see almost everything you guys see without any prompting from you, but I totally went to see The Orphanage because of you, and I couldn't thank you more. If I had seen it before year's end 07, it definitely would have been my top 10. Ditto, 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days. Your strong rec for Orphanage made me find it at the only theater in my area on its last night at 10:35 p.m., and I was the only one in the theater gasping and on the edge of my seat the whole time. Awesome. Not a baby, clearly.
No,
Jeff,
no, clearly not. I mean, that takes some bravery, Maddie. I don't know that
yeah,
I could
we made
it
through it.
It.
I told you about my experience.
I know.
Oh, I was terrified, absolutely terrified. But we've actually gotten a lot of people that wrote in and said thanks for the suggestion.
On
it
the
is one you want to see in the theater.
Yes, hopefully with other people around, though, to protect you.
Right.
So, okay, Brooks Robertson here in San Fran's got a good one, too.
He says, I started listening to Cinecast when iTunes started pushing podcasts. And
did you just cuss saying Cinecast on air? Isn't that a swear word now?
Cinecast?
Yeah, what's Cinecast?
I have no idea. Well,
Maddie's totally confused. Just keep reading, Maddie. Just keep reading.
Where am I? How did all these people get in my room? At some point, I eventually went back and listened to the episodes that preceded the iTunes update. So I went back through the list of all your reviews, and here are some of the pleasant surprises I received by watching movies you guys talked about. In chronological order. Oh, here we go. Me and You and Everyone We Know. Mm. Hustle and Flow. The Squid and the Whale. The New World. I'm not sure I love this movie, but it was really interesting, and there was no way I would have seen it had you guys not talked about it. Bubble. What happened to his other movies in this series? Did I miss them, or did he bail out of the idea? Idiocracy.
Awesome.
Once. I can't imagine I ever would have heard of this film prior to its nomination for Best Song, but I'm really glad I did.
And Sam, since you have a direct line to Mr. Soderbergh,
that's true.
When is the follow-up to Bubble coming?
It's a really good, you know, I was just thinking this the other day. Well, I don't know what prompted me to wonder that. I think I was seeing something. I know his production company. I don't know which it is, and I saw a film that was produced by his company, and the production company shares with the owner of the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah,
oh,
Mark Cuban.
Mark
yeah.
Cuban, and I was just like, where is the next series? I don't even know what's next for him, and I'm his chief acolyte. Is that the right word?
Sure. It works
ass
for me.
Kisser,
I like sycophant better.
Yeah, sycophant, yeah. That's it.
Okay.
That's
well,
what I was looking for.
Let's close out with this one from our nemesis.
Oh,
elegant nemesis, M. Robert Turnage. I've been meaning to email you this for a while. I own and evangelize about Incident at Loch Ness every chance I get, thanks to Sam Van Hallgren. And we're coming full circle with the Herzog there as well, being that he's in that film.
Probably the first film I think I saw, and again, not by Herzog, but starring Herzog, sort of playing a mocking version of himself which is really great. But and M. Robert Turnage, can we give him a shout-out for also the scribe of Haitian Divorce?
He wrote your script.
Yes.
Top five actors we'd cast.
Yes.
He wrote Haitian
Brett
Divorce.
Brett Merriman, hello. Get on the stick, my friend. You know, a very good script.
You
I'm
know,
glad I have a forum now to say how good M. Robert Turnage's Haitian Divorce is.
You know, I have to admit, I haven't even had a chance to read it yet. And I think I said I would link to it on our site, and I don't think we have
You've
yet.
You've got
to
do it.
I need to put it in
remarkable.
The show notes. Okay.
Okay.
Well, we will take one more quick break, and when we come back, we've got Massacre Theater. This is going to be a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
And more top five film spotting discoveries. Stay with us.
Yeah, some fools seem to get the luck of the draw. Stand proud.
Time now to take a look at what is new on DVD, brought to you by TLAvideo.com, the world of film at your fingertips.
Coming out this Tuesday and also March 4th, not a lot to choose from here, but Into the Wild is coming out, a movie from Sean Penn, of course, Maddie, that we both very much enjoyed. I believe it was in your top 10 of the year.
Yeah, I love it. And Hal Holbrook, terrific in
the
film.
Terrific. My Kid Could Paint That, a documentary I saw in Toronto and played in limited release. I definitely recommend checking that film out if you have a chance. And then Things We Lost in the Fire. This is Suzanne Bier. I don't know if I'm saying her last name correctly or not, but she also directed After the Wedding, a movie that we both love from last year. This is the film with Halle Berry and Benicio Del Toro. We did not get a chance to see it, but maybe considering her track record.
A lot of people have recommended it, yeah.
Yeah, we may have to check that one out. In the classic section here, a Billy Wilder gift set. It includes The Apartment, The Fortune Cookie, Some Like It Hot, and Kiss Me Stupid.
Oh, two of my favorite movies of all time, The Apartment and Some Like It Hot.
There you go. And then 12 Angry Men, a 50th anniversary edition of that film, out now on DVD. And, of course, you can get all the DVDs we mentioned in this segment at great prices through TLAvideo.com. Just click on the Film Spotting Movie Store link at filmspotting.net.
Okay, this is a milestone week for
it
us
is.
Here. We want to take time now to thank everybody who found their way over to filmspotting.net and threw a couple of their hard-earned dollars their way. We are humbled, of course, by each and every single donation. And in our gratitude, we want to bestow upon you your Sam Van Halgren Film Spotting nickname. And this is the last week. And so, with honors.
Oh, this is going to take a while. Settle
it
in,
is.
Folks.
Settle in. Get comfortable. Break out the grape knee-high.
Yeah.
the Oreos, whatever you need.
Radar knee-high. O'Reilly.
Thank you.
That's who you are. It just came to me with the knee-high from Iowa. That's right.
Oh, Hawkeye. Oh. Right.
What number? Remember, no, yeah, Radar O'Reilly. Gary Berghoff played Radar O'Reilly on MASH as this, you know, little cherubic Iowa farm
That's
boy
me?
Who liked grape.
I've never even been on a farm, Maddie.
Radar.
Let's
I'm calling
move on.
You Radar from now on.
All right.
Can we start over?
No. Tape is running. Okay, so yes, I think you guys will appreciate this list. It's for really the two of you and all our listeners. We are thanking today Andrew, Gestapo Tactics, E, Andrew, Home Cooking, J, Benjamin, Absolutely Right, Bradley, $80,000 Day, Brandon, Parched Throat, Homicide, Brent, Friend of the Working Man, Brooks, Brass Balls, Catherine, Lemkin, Chad, Bishop Sheen, Christian, Steak Knives, Diane, Stupid Factory Cat. You gotta just gotta listen to that. So you know what I mean by Stupid Factory Cat. Douglas, River Oaks, a.k.a. Kill the Goose, Drew, Vishnu Lottery, Edward, Gum Chewing Lessons, Eric, Marshalling Mrs. Flabota, George, You Saw My Book, Ian, That's Who I Am and You're Nothing, Yella, Nervous as a Thief, James, Rice Bowl, Jeffrey, Boots, Jennifer, Two Hands and a Map, Juan, Shoes, Justin, I Found Out Whose Cousin I Am, Justin, Man's Game Peck, I'm sorry, that's Justin, I Found Out Whose Cousin I Am, S, and Justin, Man's Game P, Kate, Money in the Mattress, Kelly, Dotted Line, Ken, Tonight is the Thing, Matthew, First Prize, El Dorado, Melissa, Watch Me Eat, Micah, Dreck for Sale, Michael, Action, Nicola, 5 Business Days, Paul, In the A-Hole Business, Robert, Betting the Other Way, Robert, Kenilworth, and that's Robert Kenilworth L and Robert Betting the Other Way H, Ron, I'm Not a Leash, Russell, Peach Fuzz, Sam, All You Need is Leads, Sean, Closers, Dark Roast, Shannon, Now is the Time, Simone, Concrete, Cafe Olé, and Tony, Frank Wu. That's my name. Thanks to everybody who donated to Film Spotting this week.
That was a mouthful. We do appreciate all the generosity. We have to say, of course, Justin P. there, Silver Club, Drew a Silver Club, Simone a Gold member, Kelly Silver, Andrew Silver, Brooks a Silver. We got a lot of great ones there, including a Platinum Club donation from Brent.
Very, very humble.
We really
you
do appreciate it.
You stupid factory cat, you idiot.
Of course, Glengarry Glenn Ross, the theme this week, a logical choice there. Yeah, we have to say, too, to James K. What was James' nickname?
Oh, one moment, please. James
Sam?
K. Rice Bowl.
James Rice Bowl. That was a gift. That nickname,
Rice Bowl. Okay.
That nickname was a gift.
Okay.
So you can thank your friend Michael for that, who also was a donor this week. And we have to say, I love these donation dedications we got. Nicola, that was from your friend Felicity. She's going to miss listening to the show with you, and she fully expects to get together on a Friday night to discuss the episode with
All
a glass of wine.
Nicola,
we hope
5 business days.
We hope you guys have fun.
You've seen my book.
You've seen my book. You're not counting it. It's thank a weekend.
You.
Wait.
Thank you to everyone.
What Williamson, I'm just saying.
They could go on all day, folks, with this script. But really, this is the last time for nicknames here, but we hope everyone will, of course, continue to support the show.
Really, we do have to mention, they are the lifeblood
of the show. It is the lifeblood of Film Spotting. It really is. And of course, we have great sponsors, but we really do depend on you guys. And of course, now you're going to have an interest in determining what films we talk about here on the show. You donate to the show, you get a chance at maybe having your favorite film reviewed on Film Spotting. I don't know if that's better than the nickname, Sam, but we got to try something.
Hey, you got to. Okay. I've run out of nicknames.
Thanks, everyone.
They're closed at 3 on Sundays.
Yeah, I know. I know, they almost didn't let us in. Okay, but it was a couple of minutes before 3, and Ian looked like he was about ready to cry, and so they said okay.
But for dinner?
Go in and ask him yourself, Chuck. Okay, go in and see if they would serve a party that came in at 2:58, and the answer would be yes, because that's when we got here.
The Forbes guys are going to have all this, too, and they're going to dig through the records
wrong,
at that office building. Okay, I'm sure they have surveillance cameras, and they're going to check them.
I didn't do anything wrong, Chuck.
I really wish you'd stop saying that.
Welcome back to Film Spotting. It's time now for Massacre Theater, the part of the show where Adam and I massacre a beloved screenplay, and you, our beloved listeners, get a shot at winning a free beloved DVD. Now, last week, we massacred the scene you just heard with Hayden Christensen and Peter Sarsgaard from Shattered Glass, a tie-in with the top 5 actors we wouldn't cast in our movie. Now, I'm assuming that's referring to Mr. Christensen and not Mr. Sarsgaard.
Well, a lot of people did write in expressing that same thought, hoping it didn't apply to him as well, and I'm a big fan of his. I'm sure you are too.
Huge.
Yeah, Sam, I know you've always liked
him. Yeah, I mean, Sarsgaard was probably holding his breath till this week.
I'm sure.
Wondering what you guys were
However, his last 3 roles, you think about Jarhead, which neither of us, I think, liked him in.
That's
I don't
true.
Think he was very good there.
I
Rendition.
Know where you're going. And then? You're the Dog, baby.
You're the Dog.
Very good.
Yeah.
You didn't like
very
it? I thought it was
I liked it a lot.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I liked it a lot.
Oh, okay.
Yes, Molly Shannon was in my top 5 performances.
I didn't like the movie or him in it.
What,
so.
You're a Lake House guy and you didn't like You're the Dog?
Correct.
Oh, man.
Very
and
good,
I will freely admit to that.
Film.
But we did get a lot of emails from people who, obviously we have a lot of journalism majors out there, because we did get a ton of responses to this Massacre Theater. They accepted the challenge. It, of course, wasn't the least entered, as we had said. You had me all worried that people didn't know this film. Apparently, everyone saw Shattered Glass.
I didn't know all these journalists listened to our show.
I know.
Why would respected
How
journalist,
not to do a
someone
radio
would
show,
train and
think,
listen to this
like
show?
That.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. But very many people out there enjoyed your Hayden Christensen wine, Maddie. I have to say, there were a couple moments of gold there.
Thank you.
Did
Thank
you just, like, drop your IQ by 50,
Yeah, basically,
60%?
I tried to think of, whether or not I have any talent, and then forget about it. And we did have a winner this week, so Adam, why don't you reach into the Film Spotting hat and pick him or her out?
And the winner is Seth Michelizzi from Brooklyn, New York, our favorite borough.
Brooklyn.
Congratulations, Seth. Email feedback@filmspotting.net, and we'll set you up with a DVD of your choice.
Now, you guys got to look menacing. Can you be more menacing?
And action.
We move on now to this week's edition of Massacre Theater, and it does tie in very directly with our Film Spotting Discoveries Top 5, but as well, any longtime listeners out there, I think you'll just recognize that this is the no-brainer choice. We had to do this scene for Massacre Theater, and I pretty much get to sit out here. I'm going to turn it over to the trained professionals here and let them do their magic. So are you guys ready? I'm going to give you the direction.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
All right.
This should be fun. Okay? And action.
Blank.
Oh, hi, Blank. How's it going?
This is my room.
Oh, yeah? Terrific.
Can I confess something? I tell you this because, as an artist, I think you'll understand. Sometimes when I'm driving on the road at night, I see 2 headlights coming toward me fast. I have this sudden impulse to turn the wheel quickly, head on, into the oncoming car. I can anticipate the explosion, the sound of shattering glass, the flames rising out of the flowing gasoline.
Right. Well, I have to go now, Blank, because I'm due back on planet Earth.
And scene. If you know what film
Battle of the Titans.
Yeah. If you don't know, Maddie and Sam just massacred. That was a lot of fun, guys. Thank you. Email your name, location, and the movie's title to feedback@filmspotting.net by Wednesday, March 12th. You got a little bit of extra time this week.
All right. The winner will be selected randomly from all the correct entries and announced on next week's show. To get official Massacre Theater rules, please visit www.filmspotting.net.
How are you and Carrie going to have a happy marriage
if we can love this film?
When your hearts are the color of coal? That's what I'd like to know. Because, Sam, you haven't been this wrong about a film.
No, you're kidding me.
You have not been this wrong
What's happening right now?
Since American Dream.
The hoax continues. You're perpetrating a hoax on me.
Well, it was referenced earlier in the show, a little trip down nostalgia lane there. We had to play a brief clip from Sam, I think, probably the most famous, beloved, or at least infamous episode in the Film Spotting back catalog, The Battle of the Lake House there. But we do want to get on to our top five discoveries. And again, we've had all our listeners write in with movies they discovered because of our show, but we've, of course, discovered a lot of films because of doing this show. And Sam, let's go ahead and start with you. Why don't you set up how you formed this list? Give us your number five.
Well, I guess I want to start out by saying a couple that didn't make the cut, and I showed as a sort of shocking strain of xenophobia here, with two Japanese contenders that were cut from my top five, Ozu's Tokyo Story.
I was sure it would be on your list.
And Grave of the Fireflies.
Unbelievable.
Two films that, yes, I loved, and it's true, I never would have seen without Film Spotting. And I think, honestly, two of the first films that came to my mind when this list was suggested. But when I put the list together, going through all the movies we've seen, it really became more about people and performances, I think, than it did about movies specifically. And the single criteria that ended up mattering the most was not just discovering something that I never would have seen, but more, did I want more of that, whatever it was, or whoever it was. And Ozu and Fireflies, to be honest, I haven't put together that Ozu marathon I was planning on, nor probably will I ever. And I think, like we've all discussed, we're never sitting through Grave of the Fireflies again.
Maybe
unless
not.
Maybe we want our kids to cry.
To suffer.
Yeah, to suffer. So I guess with that, I wanted to, my number six, if I could, quickly, I wanted to give a shout out to William Powell and Myrna Loy.
Another one I thought for sure would be on this list.
And I followed up with, I did get to see After the Thin Man, the second film, which is superior, as many people have said, to The Thin Man. Brilliant. And William Powell, too, in My Man Godfrey. William Powell, a definite discovery. Number five, an interesting variation on this, is Vertigo. It's because I'd seen the film before. And it really is an example of the real gift that is Film Spotting, because knowing you're going to discuss something for an audience of people that are much, much smarter than you, and it just really makes you pay attention. And civilians, as I am now, do not have a lot of patience, and they get bored with something and they turn it off. Not that I turned off Vertigo when I'd seen it before, but clearly didn't get it. And when I saw it this time as part of our Hitchcock marathon, it completely blew me away. And it really seriously made me doubt every other film I'd written off.
Been negative on
before? Yeah, really did. It was like, I clearly missed something massive the first time. And so that alone, really, I want to thank Film Spotting for that experience.
Well, I had a similar experience with Vertigo. We had both seen that film before.
Right.
It was part of our marathon, but included it because we wanted to revisit it and see if we were nuts. And it turns out we were nuts.
We both
liked it, but we didn't love it like we did that second time. And seeing it in that context of the Hitchcock films was a lot of fun, but one that did not make my list. Now, Maddie, you are 22 or 23 episodes into your Film Spotting tenure here. How did you go about forming your discoveries list?
Well, I'm going to keep this short and sweet because you know what I feel like? I feel like one of those reunion shows that CBS has for like Mary Tyler Moore or Carol Burnett. You know, I'm just waiting for Harvey Korman to walk through the door. So I think it's fine. You can pat yourselves on your back. So my number five is Science of Sleep. Film I would not have seen if you had not made it your number one. I was in Soho. It just happened to be shown as a little art house film. And I was like, I'll go in and check it out. Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Gael Garcia Bernal, of course, and the Michel Gondry film,
yeah.
The Science of Sleep. Well, my number five, I'm going with a couple musicals, and maybe only one in particular, but we did a musicals marathon because for us that was something we both felt we were very deficient in. And I had always avoided West Side Story. I had never had really any interest in seeing it. It just never did anything for me. I mean, it's become kind of a cultural joke, you know, with those guys doing their little dancing and trying to be all tough when they're not at all tough. But you know what? I really love West Side Story. Jerome Robbins and Robert Wise, of course, and Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim doing the music. And it is fashionable to rip on West Side Story. I think it has become. I think so. Whenever I talk to guys who are real musical snobs, they always say they don't really care for it. That's fine.
I took part in that fashion.
I think during
our marathon. It was
you only gave it three stars. It was your least favorite.
It was my least favorite. I think because it said so much about what what musicals became afterwards, which I don't like. I like Oklahoma. I like The Music Man. Mm-hmm. You know, I like those kind of musicals, the musicals that are really sophisticated musically.
Your issue is with Sondheim.
Is definitely with Sondheim.
Yep. Okay. Well, absolutely. I did end up loving West Side Story and also Cabaret, even though I was a big Bob Fosse fan. I mean, I love all that jazz. Something about Liza Minnelli and just, again, being kind of averse to musicals. I wasn't in a hurry to see it. We both ended up loving that one as well.
Liza Minnelli.
My number five, your number four, Sam.
My number four, pair of people here, Preston Sturges and Barbara Stanwyck, because they made a perfect film together, The Lady Eve. I guess I was just giddy with Sturges' wit and this sort of cocky genius of his. And I don't include Henry Fonda here, because, of course, he was a large part of that film as well, because it didn't make me, like it did for Sturges and Stanwyck, hungry for more Henry Fonda. But we saw Sullivan's Travels as part of that same Screwball Marathon. Brilliant. But I did go on to see, and I guess I'm explaining why it's only at number four here, because I was so astounded by that film. I went on to see Miracle of Morgan's Creek and Palm Beach Story, both of which really disappointed me. Palm Beach Story, I don't even think I got through. It seems like during that time, films were thrown together really, really quickly, and both films kind of suffer from that. Stanwyck, we've had our debate over Double Indemnity. She was good, but not as sort of transformative as I thought she was in Lady Eve. I hear I have to see Ball of Fire, which is on my list next. So I'm still hungry for more Stanwyck. Loved her.
Absolutely. Howard Hawks is Ball of Fire.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Well, Maddie, number four.
All right. Well, my number four, this is sort of akin to, you know, when you find out your dad isn't perfect and or, you know, there might not be a Santa Claus or a tooth fairy.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. This is the time when I discovered my two film hosts that I put my trust in movies let me down.
Oh.
Number one.
Where this is going.
A History of Violence. I was there 11 o'clock that night with my friend, Jen Ashley, mutual friend of ours.
Absolutely. Okay.
Just there, based on your recommendation, could not have hated the movie
She got
more.
It, though, I assume.
She did get it, yes.
Right?
What?
She got it?
No.
Oh, okay.
She hasn't spoken
to
Sam
Maddie
since.
Doesn't get Cronenberg, haven't we decided?
Yes, we have.
Yeah, exactly. I don't get it. And then this one as well. I went just because you guys recommended it. The Breakup.
Yes.
How could you sing that film's praises? Seriously.
Because it's good.
It's
and
terrible.
And it confounded expectations.
That's right.
It's awful.
No.
It's an awful
no,
film.
It's
you don't
awful.
Like having your expectations confounded.
Yeah.
That's the problem,
perhaps.
Maddie.
Maddie
you're confounding
likes
me
going
right
in
now.
Thinking exactly
I want to know.
As...
I want my ducks in a row.
Uh-huh.
And you put them for, you know, usually.
Okay.
Cronenberg,
well,
by the end of Maddie's film spotting run, whenever that
he'll
is,
love him.
He will come around to Cronenberg. I can't wait till it happens where he has to have the mea culpa.
Cronenberg Marathon, Videodrome. We're getting into all of them here.
Okay, good.
My number four, and I do want to say here, my top three. I have single picks here, but number four, I couldn't separate these three movies. It's a horror movie triumvirate. We did our horror marathon. I think it was the second one we did.
Yeah.
Dawn of the Dead, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Suspiria, the movie written by a 12-year-old, I think.
11-year-old.
11-year-old, sorry.
That's right.
But with Romero and Argento, they're such legends of the genre. I think eventually I would have seen those films, of course, but I wouldn't have been in any kind of hurry because, as we've already talked about, we're all kind of averse to horror films and the blood and gore of it. Right. We're just big wimps, but I definitely would not have seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, just because it always struck me as a film that was gore just for the sake of gore. And what we discovered was, of course,
really
all those
satire,
movies were kind of revelations in a way. They have elements of political satire and social satire, and a lot of times the real fright comes out of the characters and their situations. And I think the joys of Suspiria maybe only are visual, but I had fun with it.
Right.
So for me, it's my horror movie trilogy there, number four.
Yeah, I think the movie that sticks out for me that I have the most fondness for is Texas Chainsaw Massacre, weirdly.
Fondness.
Will I go back to see that? No, probably not.
Uh-huh.
But, all right, number three, Sunrise, A Song of Two Humans, part of the apex, really, I think, of our
silent
movie
film?
Marathon.
Yeah,
F.W. Murnau, Janet Gaynor, and George O'Brien. Allow me to hyperbolize. Simply the greatest film ever made. Or I guess I will say, like, certainly the greatest, you know, silent film, I think, certainly that I've been exposed to, and I guess that's probably like seven or eight. But I guess I appreciate it on so many different levels, just that it is incredible silent film achievement, but really in so many ways I think it's a greater accomplishment or equals the greatest accomplishment of sound films, really. And I also appreciate it for the fact that it's among the most successful pretentious undertakings ever made. It really is Murnau saying, like, here is life depicted on screen, and he pulls it off. It really is just incredible. And really, I had developed an appreciation, I think, for silent films at that point, but this gave me an appetite for more of them.
Yeah, it's a great pick. Just missed my list. One I loved as well. Maddie, what about you?
All right, well, my number three is actually one that you recommended, Adam. I usually fall in line with Sam's taste, but number three, The Final Countdown.
Yes.
Love that film. Absolutely love
1980s.
Yep.
It was on my science fiction films,
maybe? Yeah, where they go back in time.
The aircraft carrier,
maybe nostalgia
Kirk Douglas.
Picks as well.
It's a nostalgia pick as well. Well, you ended up loving it. That's great to
loved
hear.
Loved it.
Okay, well, my number three, I'm sure he's going to be coming up here again at some point, but let's go ahead and hear a voicemail or two from some of our listeners.
Hi, Adam, Sam, and Maddie. This is Charles from Jacksonville, Florida. I have to call and thank you, get on my knees and thank you. I have never heard of Werner Herzog until your marathon, and I have to tell you guys, I was with you every step of the way. Just the madness of Herzog, Kinski, and the characters he plays. You had just never seen anything, the scope of anything like that before in my life.
Hey guys, this is Scott from L.A., and when I heard that you guys were doing the Film Spotting Discoveries show, I had to call in to mention the Herzog-Kinski marathon that you guys did a while back. Quite a revelation for me. Herzog's now one of my favorite directors, and I had a great time following along with those podcasts.
Charles and Scott there, of course, talking about Werner Herzog. And really, I'm just saying Werner Herzog is my number three. That entire marathon, the wonder of Fitzcarraldo, the madness of Klaus Kinski, and really discovering the nature of that relationship and their films and really being able to dive into it was just fantastic. So for me, a huge discovery. I mean, really, a lot of our listeners are saying, obviously, that it was because of us. Well, it was huge for us as well to really find those guys and dive in. So Herzog's my number three.
Well, it's perfect that you set it up as your three. It's my number two, absolutely. Would I have discovered Herzog on my own? Perhaps to some degree. I would have seen Grizzly Man, or maybe already had. I would have seen Rescue Don, I'm sure, because I love Christian Bale. But having to sit through five Herzog-Kinski films, like the marathon, Film Spotting Marathon made us do, it really made me, and I guess almost begrudgingly, when I look back to how I was sort of taking the films at first, really accept him as one of the most important filmmakers in the history of film. And I guess if his influence isn't commonly felt, I don't know if we can point out a lot of filmmakers that are directly influenced by them, I guess I want to say, like, he should be. And I think he's known for how epic and difficult his film shoots are, but what ultimately really won me over to him is how simple his films are.
Yeah.
They are very, very simple. What he does with just a wide shot and a long shot, and what he did with his actors, I mean, yeah, I count him among my very favorite filmmakers, largely due to the marathon.
Yeah, well, maybe he just takes some risks, obviously, that other filmmakers won't in terms of the subject matter and the locations. But I think that's a testament to him as well, that he's truly unique. I mean, there's nobody else out there who makes films like Herzog.
Yeah, so. I will say, too, I referred to this briefly in the last segment, but I remember Fitzcarraldo coming in the mail from Netflix when Maddie and I were living together long before Film Spotting, and it just sitting on the coffee table. We didn't touch it. I don't know. Maddie may have started it. Maybe he got through it.
I got through it.
But I maybe started it, and I was like, no way. So I'm just, this is what Film Spotting, it forces you to sit through and appreciate, and really just your world gets much larger.
Okay, Maddie.
All right, well, my number two is the documentary marathon. That was probably my favorite. Now, I actually didn't play along with the marathons. What I would do is I would put all the titles in my Netflix queue, and they would just sort of pop up every now and then. And I absolutely loved it. It was the documentary marathon. I'd only seen Hearts and Minds and Times of Harvey Milk, so it was just great. And Vernon, Florida, I finally wrapped it up, came just a couple weeks ago. What a brilliant film. Absolutely. Errol Morris. Thank you guys for turning me on to him.
Yeah, we had Gates of Heaven, I think, in there as well. Two Errol Morris films.
Yeah, Vernon, Florida is one of my favorites.
Harlan County, USA almost made my list. That was big. Of course, Don't Look Back was part of that marathon as well. Well, my number two here, I know everyone has to think this one's coming at some point. We've already heard a voicemail mention it, but it's got to be Rio Bravo, Howard Hawks, 1959, John Wayne and Dean Martin. And it's funny because we had an emailer earlier that we mentioned, Aaron, with the cool mom. And he talked about how one of the reasons he didn't like Westerns or didn't think he liked Westerns was because his grandfather liked Westerns. And his grandfather also liked country music. So we kind of went, well, you know what? Why would I want to follow this guy's taste? But it's funny because a lot of listeners wrote in during that marathon, Sam, and they pointed out something that was true for me. My dad watched Westerns. So it was almost this kind of act of rebellion to be like, why do I want to get into Westerns? And so I was like a lot of people that did that, and yet then we watched Rio Bravo and ended up being my favorite film in that marathon. And it's just, it's a blast. What can I say? It's the ultimate kind of guy film, but I think everyone can enjoy it, obviously, and John Wayne and Dean Martin are so good in it.
My number one is John Wayne, no question. I mean, he's the most iconic figure in the history of motion pictures, certainly among them. And how could he possibly have lived up to expectations, knowing that that's what he was? And he did it in his relatively small part in Stagecoach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did it in The Searchers, and then of course then in Rio Bravo as John T. Chance. But and I think you're asking, like, was he relevant to me? He's relevant to my grandparents or my father. But he's become, unfortunately, this caricature that doesn't have any context for several generations, including our own.
True.
And I feel blessed to have the opportunity really to have to dive back into that and really appreciate what this guy was, this great actor and great movie star.
Well, you know, it's funny because actually Chris Eigenman, who went to Kenyon, came back and we had a little Q&A, and someone asked him, like, who do you like? Who do you like to watch? Who are your favorite actors? And his answer surprised me. He said, John Wayne.
Wow.
I think he tells the truth more than anybody. Mm. My only experience with John Wayne was, of course, through the pulp culture, you know, caricature that
Robin
you
said. Williams.
Yeah, exactly.
Impersonation, yeah.
Exactly. So, luckily, his comment actually propelled me to go watch a little bit more Wayne. So I was a little bit more aware of how good this guy actually was.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, really fantastic. He was a huge discovery for me as well in that marathon. What about you, Maddie? What's your number one discovery?
All right, well, my number one, animated films. I don't know why. It's so hard to get me to go watch these films. But whenever I see them, when I walk out of the theater, I'm always so happy that I did. And my number one is Spirited Away. I'd always been meaning to see that film. Finally, your marathon got me to watch it. And wow, I loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it.
Yeah, that's a great film,
yeah.
Spirit Away. I considered it as well, but it perfectly ties in then with my number one. It's got to be Grave of the Fireflies, and we did get a great voicemail from Thomas in Nashville who mentioned it. 1988 film, Isao Takahata. It's based on Akiyuki Nasaka's semi-autobiographical novel, which just makes the whole story even more depressing when you think about it, set near the end of World War II in Japan, and these two orphan children, Seida and Setsuko, and they're just trying to survive, and it's just bleak and it's profoundly devastating, but I also think it's full of joy in this relationship between this brother and sister, and it's number one here on the list because of all the movies we've mentioned so far and that I've said, it's the one that I would have been least likely to see if it wasn't for our listeners. That marathon, the animation and anime marathon, Sam, was one where we knew the least about. Relied on our listeners the most to determine the lineup of that marathon. And if it wasn't for them writing in and singing the praises of this film, it never would have been included in the marathon and never would have been, for me, one of those films that ended up just having such a huge impact on me. And so it's great to see all the emails we've received from people saying thank you for you know, making me suffer through that movie, and then we get to return the favor a little bit. I mean, it really is for us.
Along those same lines, I just want to thank our film spotting audience.
Yeah.
We just get besieged with, you know, film recommendations all the time, and I want to thank them. Right now, I'm working my way through The Long Good Friday. I had never seen it before. People wrote in and said, how could you leave that
Bob
off
Hoskins.
your London list? I'd never seen it. I'm watching it. It's brilliant. So, you know, thank you so much to our...
one of the earliest, lists we put together was the Overlooked list. And that everybody has an Overlooked list. And we created that category online just to give people an opportunity because everybody's got that list. Everybody's got a film that they want to recommend. And absolutely. Thanks to listeners. Although listeners were responsible for us seeing Ghost in a Shell. So I don't know which is worse, that they made us see Grave of the Fireflies.
Who recommended The Lake House? How did that come up?
You know what?
That was a
listeners.
Recommendation.
That was listeners as well. Listeners so, writing in.
Shame on you, film spotting
rightfully
listeners.
Saying it was worth seeing. And
all
we
right.
Thank them.
All right. Well, those are our top five film spotting discoveries. Please send your picks or any other comments about the show to feedback@filmspotting.net. All right. Opening wide this weekend, The Other Boleyn Girl with Eric Bana, Scarlett Johansson, and Natalie Portman, Penelope, and Semi-Pro
with our boy
Will
Ferrell
and Woody Harrelson. In limited release, City of Men.
Yeah, the follow-up to City of God, and one I hope we do get to check out and maybe talk about here on the show. Next week does mark the 3-year anniversary of Film Spotting. This really, the timing works out perfectly, and we'll honor that milestone with a week off.
Thank God.
You'll hear a best-of show featuring some of our favorite interviews from the past year, and we'll be back in 2 weeks, and of course we'll update the calendar page at filmspotting.net just as soon as we have more information about those shows. We also wanted to mention that we are quite sure many of you sent in donations for a Sam Van Halgren nickname as well as discoveries feedback that we didn't get to in time to read on the show. Rest assured, you will get your nickname on our next show, and hopefully we can squeeze in some more discoveries feedback as well because we got so much great stuff.
All right. Thanks, as always, to our listener volunteers, Alex, Angela, Frank, and Candace. Special thanks to Joe Dassault, Ron Jones, and Tori Malatia at Chicago Public Radio, and to Wilder Embry for this week's music. Learn more at wilderembry.com.
And of course, Sam, we want to thank you for stopping by. It has
been
a while, obviously, since we've seen you. It really was a lot of fun. And hopefully we'll see you on another 100 episodes or so.
I'll be there, man.
Still be kicking around in Milwaukee.
Yes, indeed.
All right. For Film Spotting, I'm Adam Kempinar.
And I'm Maddie Robinson. Thanks for listening.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Film Spotting is brought to you by TLAvideo.com, the world of film at your fingertips. Learn more by visiting the Film Spotting movie store at filmspotting.net.
Mr. Kempinar.
I love it when you get all dulcet toned, like, you know, you're going to serenade me or something.
Yeah, I think I should do it like Daniel Day-Lewis one of these days.
You should.
You and I come from similar backgrounds. Both small town Midwestern boys.
Now my co-host,
Here's my co-host, H.W.